Hello, everyone, and welcome back to GRCast Season 2. All new, completely excellent compared to the first season. It was garbage. If anyone listened, garbage. But now, it's going to be your favorite podcast, I promise you that. Matt and I are sitting down today. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
And we're going to talk a little bit about E3 2014, which is just wrapped at the time of this recording. It was a pretty good show. You know, we've got one company focusing on graphics and storytelling, and another company focusing on all our favorite childhood characters, and then Microsoft. So there you go. you and I haven't talked too much about the show, but I'm sort of wondering what your thoughts overall were of the show. Who did the best? What did you like? What did you not like? And how come I love Amiibos so much?
Yeah, I mean, that's a mystery. It's a mystery to everyone. So what I'm wondering is, with this E3, if it wasn't so much the fact that it was a great E3, but that it was just better than the last three or four, because the last three or four have been so overshadowed by the fact that these new consoles were coming along, even when we didn't know what they were called, even when we didn't know that they were officially confirmed or that they were officially being made. They were still so overshadowing the whole event that there was no way that the things that were being shown could live up to the hype. And this time, it's kind of been like E3 of old. And because of that, it kind of feels like it was a 10 out of 10 show, even though it was probably only a 7 out of 10 show.
Well, apart from Nintendo, who we'll get to in a minute, what sort of big reveals were there? Like, I sort of joked Microsoft was there too, but I couldn't name something big that they did. Surely there's something.
The biggest announcement, it's one that has kind of split people, is this the Halo Master Chief Collection, because it is a Xbox One HD collection, basically, of Halo 1, Halo 2, Halo 3, and Halo 4. It's got 100 multiplayer maps. It's got the second game is remade so that it's better graphics. You know, it might not be for everyone because it's still effectively a re-release, a HD collection, whatever. But that is amazing. That's an awesome set.
That is pretty cool. It's a little sad that their big thing is, hey, all these games we made before, here they are again. But I guess Sony's doing a little bit of that too.
Right. I mean, I can understand why people were getting all excited for new IP and that sort of thing, and then this comes along. But just the fact that you can get every single Halo game on Xbox One, or you will be able to at the end of the year, is pretty amazing. It's gonna be, just for the multiplayer alone, it would be enough to keep most people happy throughout the entire Christmas period and into next year. And the addition of the single player games for people that haven't played 4 or haven't played 3, or forgotten what's happened in the first two, that's huge. That it's all there on one disc.
You know what the really sad thing is that there are probably people who have an Xbox One or will be getting one, and they'll get this collection, and they'll think, I really want to play Halo 1 and 2. Halo's my favorite series, but I was too young when 1 and 2 came out.
God, that's true. Yeah. I remember playing Halo 1 and 2 when it first came out on the original brick Xbox, and I was young at the time, so damn, that's a depressing thought, isn't it? And you're even older, you're ancient, so...
Yeah, I told everyone that you had sort of unthawed me from cryosleep and set me back to my prime directive of podcast recording, and that's the only reason I'm even here.
Yeah, and after we finish this season, you can just die happily.
I don't know about happily, but I'll almost certainly be dead. Speaking of things being remade, are you more excited about Master Chief Collection or more excited about the fact that they're remaking Grand Theft Auto 5 for systems for whatever reason?
Well, it was always going to happen. I mean, there's been rumors since the week that Grand Theft Auto 5 came out. It was one of those strange reveals where everyone knew it was probably going to happen, but still got excited for it. It was terrible because, I mean, the week that it came out, there were... DirectX code. There was DirectX code found in the PlayStation 3 version of the game or something like that. So everyone knew that they were working on a PC version, but they just had to keep it a secret. They just had to keep the hype going. And it didn't. It worked for some strange reason. Even though everyone knew it was coming, people still seemed to think that's a huge deal.
That was one of those games where they really rolled out the hype train, as they always do, and everybody got really excited, and it got a million tens for, you know, hey, whatever, fine, it's a game. But it was a fun game. I liked the story missions and everything, but they seemed to, more and more, just pack in thousands of side activities that you would never, ever want to do. They're such a waste of time. Anybody who took a bunch of time to do, like, yoga in that game, please get a life.
You know, I forgot that we actually were off-season when the Grand Theft Auto 5 came out. I completely forgot that we hadn't done a podcast about that. That's mad. We could have done a whole one comparing our tennis scores.
Yeah, that would have been hard to do because I don't think I was ever within 100 yards of a place where you could play tennis in that game. I was too busy riding exploding cars through downtown, having actual fun.
Oh, Joe, you've missed the point of that game completely.
Actually, it's handy that both that and The Last of Us are being remade, because now we can do all new Season 2 enhanced special episodes for both of those games.
Right, except we're not going to buy them because they're remasters and we already played them a year ago. I'm going to wait until I can pick up The Last of Us on PS4 for about £3, which is less than a bag of fish and chips. And I'm probably going to really, really enjoy it, but there is no way in hell that I'm paying the equivalent of about $80 for it, because it is ridiculous that they're charging that much for a remake. Not even a remake, a remaster.
Yeah, that's a little crazy. But I think people will still tune in to hear it. We can just say it's the remastered edition of the special episode. People will tune in. Storyline spoilers. They don't have to know we didn't see it with the extra fancy graphics.
I didn't even see it with the non-extra fancy graphics. I really regretted it, but I'd already traded in the game. And as good as it looked, I will never... Well, until I buy the PS4 version for less than a bag of chips, I will never know what that DLC was like.
Yeah, I missed out on it too. That's a shame. Now you're making me want to buy it. I'm probably going to end up buying it brand new like a fool.
We'll just have to wing it. I have to make something up. It was fantastic. No, it wasn't. It was rubbish. Let's say it was rubbish, and then we can get a load of hits in from people telling us how we're so crap at everything and we should go and die.
Well, they were going to do that anyway, just based on the strength of this episode, probably. We should probably talk a little more about E3 real quick, a couple of games. So Uncharted 4, how excited are you?
I don't know. It looked fantastic, didn't it? The graphics were unbelievable, but... Then people started posting pictures, Uncharted 1, Uncharted 2, Uncharted 3, Uncharted 4, and it was just a close-up of Drake's face. And actually, the change between 4 and 3 wasn't as shocking as it looked the night of the conference. Just because, you know, there's only so much more they can add. The shape of his face was already there, the textures were better, you kind of got some pores in the PS4 version, but you'd have to be... kind of really into the visuals to get so excited about the change. And I know that the environments and stuff are going to be so much more better, but actually his face, not so much.
Well, Naughty Dog has kind of been the masters of the Sony consoles, haven't they? I mean, they really sort of knew how to take the PS3 and get the most out of it, as much as they could do at whatever time those games came out. So it's not a huge surprise to me that the difference between 3 and 4 is not anything crazy. By the time Uncharted, like, 8 comes out on PS4, it'll be like, holy shit.
Yeah, and you know they're going to do it. There's already talk. I think Nolan North said that this one is going to be the last one, but you know it's not going to be the last one.
How much stuff did they show for the new Metal Gear? I assume that would be highly on your radar.
It's annoying, actually. It is so annoying, but they keep showing trailers for The Phantom Pain and before that for Ground Zeroes, and there is zero plot. We don't know what's going to happen in Phantom Pain. We don't know who the enemies are. We don't know who's on your team. We know so little about the game. And then E3 comes along and you get this huge director's cut trailer, and it's basically a music video. That's not why people play Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, that's true. They play for nonsense and robots. Speaking of Metal Gear, listeners can look forward in the future to Matt Graukat's Metal Gear Minute. It's going to be a new segment we're running where Matt tries to explain to me something complicated that has happened in the Metal Gear universe, and I will probably still not understand it.
Be lucky if I do.
Well, when Metal Gear 4 was coming out, It seems like before that game even launched, they had showed like 10 hours worth of cutscenes. I remember on G4 TV, this is a long time ago, they would show like, here's the very first cutscene, and it would be an entire half an hour episode of something just watching the cutscene. I feel like they're not really doing that this time. They're just showing like, here's a clip, he's kind of crazy, he doesn't have an arm, he rides a horse, there's flames.
And that's the plot. And you know what? It'll fit in perfectly with the other four main games.
I believe that 100%.
You know, this time around, what they're showing in these trailers is Phantom Pain is going to be where Big Boss suddenly loses it. It's been years and years since the boss in Metal Gear Solid 3, and he's been slowly becoming more and more disenfranchised with the US and with the idea of nations at all, and this time he's going to be really screwed over, and we're going to learn what kind of sends him over the edge. And the trailers have all had kind of music that you would think is linked with that kind of fall into madness. It's all been very, very well picked, and the video showing him torturing old friends and giving the go-ahead on other people torturing old friends and shooting children and all sorts of awesome things that are totally, I really hope, are QuickTime events. But, you know, it's not actually given any plot, which is either a good sign because it means that we're going to have loads to be surprised by, or a bad sign because it means Kojima's finally listened to the people that are going, but I don't want to play Metal Gear if it's got two cutscenes that are longer than 10 minutes long. And that's disappointing because that's why a lot of us play Metal Gear.
Speaking of shooting children and stuff, that doesn't happen a lot in games. Even in games where you can be like a complete psychopath, they always have some way of not putting any little kids in there for you to kick in the head or whatever.
Yeah, what the hell is wrong with this industry?
Well, quickly, we have a couple minutes before we go to break. Let's talk Nintendo. In my opinion, Nintendo wins, if such a thing can be said about E3, if there are winners and losers. I feel like Nintendo had a lot of the most exciting announcements. Am I crazy?
I think you're crazy. I can see why you think so.
Well, I feel like, in my mind, they just showed more games. A lot of other people were like, oh, you know, here's a little Uncharted, maybe a little, here's a Metal Gear music video or whatever, and Xbox, oh, here's the Master Chief games you've played 100,000 hours already. But, I mean, you've got Zelda, every character, they're bringing back everything. Star Fox, are you kidding me? They announced everything short of a new Metroid, basically, and how far out could that be? By next year, if we don't hear some about that, I would be very surprised.
My only problem with Nintendo, the main thing I was looking forward to was the Zelda reveal. And they said last year, next year we're going to show Zelda. Fantastic. We knew going in that there was going to be a clip from Zelda. And now that we are past E3, the only thing we know is that there's going to be a Zelda. We don't know the name of it. We know very little about it. They've said it's open world, but the only difference that's going to make between the old Zeldas and this Zelda is that there won't be one path into a town. You'll be able to go in wherever you want. And let's face it, that probably should have been involved since Twilight Princess. That's not something that really we can get excited about. Apart from that, you know, there's the futuristic thing and the might be a girl thing that turned out to be a bust. Or not a bust, as the case may be, unfortunately. And apart from that, you know, it's the only thing we know is that there's going to be a Zelda.
Well, if they just take the formula of a link between worlds and let you go anywhere and do dungeons in whatever order or whatever, which it seems like is something they're kind of doing, then it's going to be good, in my opinion. Link Between Worlds is excellent, probably the best Zelda game I've played in I couldn't even say how long.
All I wanted was Majora's Mask 3D. Would have made me happy. That would have made me agree with you that Nintendo won. But at this point, I don't think anyone won, except for Sony, because Grim Fandango. That's going to be awesome.
It floors me that they have not just said, okay, Majora's Mask 3D. I mean, really? That's insane. That's the game everybody wants. Every Zelda fan either likes Ocarina of Time or they like Majora's Mask. And more people find out how good Majora's Mask was. I've never finished it. I've barely played it. I'm dying to get it on 3DS. Just make it already.
It's my favorite Zelda game by a long, long way. Everyone says Ocarina of Time, but with Majora's Mask, they took everything with Ocarina of Time that was fantastic, and they just made it so much more deep on so many levels. And that sounds so pretentious. And I know there's a lot of pretentious people that kind of go on about Majora's Mask. Oh, it's a metaphor for death and stuff like that. But it just on every level, it made you think about the things that you were doing just because of the timer. Because of the timer, you knew you couldn't explore a dungeon for hours and hours and ends. So you had to choose and prioritize before you going back. It just made it such a great experience.
I am really looking forward to playing it, and I have gotten it from a moral gray area on the internet and tried to play it on computers multiple times, but for some reason, just sitting on my computer and trying to play it, I can't do it. If I can put it in my pocket, it's going to be perfect. They're going to do it, right? I mean, they have to.
Yeah, eventually they have to, don't they? Because it's not going to be a super difficult game to port, and even if it wasn't 3D, even if they just released it as a virtual console game, it would still sell a bunch. So they have to do it. They have to.
Well, they already have Ocarina of Time. That came out basically when the 3DS came out, and then a couple years later, Link Between Worlds. So Majora's Mask should be next, in my opinion. In the next year and a half, that should be coming out.
Fingers crossed. I really do hope so, but could love to play it again. Out of interest, before we go to break, what do you think of Grim Fandango coming to PS4 and PlayStation Vita?
I am a fan, which you may remember. But I don't know. I didn't really see much of it. It's going to be good. I mean, there's almost no doubt about that.
They didn't show any footage, they didn't show any screens, which was disappointing, but just the announcement was enough to get me excited. That was the biggest announcement I've seen for a long time for kind of the core gamer that was around at the late 90s, because Grim Fandango can be a pain to get running. The same people that did Scum VM on PC have just released their full version of the Grim Fandango engine compatibility thing. And that fixes a load of bugs, and it means that you can play it on modern machines. But Tim Schafer being involved in a proper remake on PlayStation 4 with proper visual update, with a proper control update. I mean, there's no downside to that, unless they screw it up, which is potentially going to happen.
It might be the type of game where it is not compatible with audiences anymore. It's hard to tell. Well, we have to take a break in just a second. Quickly, before we do, I want to get one word in. Amiibos, terrible name, especially when Amigos was right there. I mean, come on. But they're excellent, and I want them badly. All right, that's me on Amigos. No, Amiibos. Shit, I don't even know what they're called anymore. My ideas are better than Nintendo's. I want Majora's Mask 3D, and I want these to be called Amigos, and it better happen. For now, let's take a little break and hear from our advertiser.
Do you want a game full of sex? Violence? Cannibalism? Anal invasion?
Oh my god, I just felt something on my bum.
Everything a red-blooded gamer could possibly need? Lesbian poultry. Introducing the only real choice for Game of the Year 2015. Animal Husbandry Simulator. Do you have what it takes to breed, care for, and love an entire farmyard full of animals, only to hilariously slaughter them for the meat market? Use all your money to create a fantastic stock based on parameters such as size and potential, just like the guys your ex-girlfriend left you for. It's fun for the family.
Hey, Mom, I just cut off this baby cow's testicles.
How about you try that on your dad?
It's not only a deep strategy game, but a simulator. And that means there's only a screen between you and your hand actually being up a cow's butt. Don't worry though, like any good simulation game, Animal Husbandry Simulator is barely playable. We have millions of glitches to the point where you're lucky if anything actually works. So make sure you buy it for $15.99 just so you can post videos on YouTube about how hilarious you are.
Hey, look, guys. I'm riding a horse and my leg is clipping through his body. Isn't that the funniest thing since I posted that picture of a giant dong?
And what would such a deep simulation experience be without multiplayer mayhem? Animal Husbandry Simulator is the one game you can use as a babysitter.
No, Timmy. You're supposed to be mounting my cow. What is wrong with you?
I'm trying. This piece of game doesn't work like it's supposed to.
Don't just trust us either. How about this perfectly unbiased games journalist, Matt Grokatz?
Animal Husbandry Simulator is almost as kick-ass as my brand new yacht.
Animal Husbandry Simulator, coming 2015. Pay $50 or more to our Kickstarter scam to receive the Clucking Classic DLC pack containing three amazing skins representing the better, cooler chickens of your childhood. Animal Husbandry Simulator, it almost feels like you're elbow deep in a pregnant cow.
And we're back. Matt, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you.
So we talked games. We didn't have a lot to talk about. I mean, E3, they had some exciting reveals, but a lot of people have probably seen them already. I mean, that's the joy of the internet. You just get on there and look for yourself, which sort of brings me to my point today. And what I'm wondering is, do you think E3 is even a show that really needs to exist anymore? I mean, the way the internet is set up, you've got people like Nintendo already. They're just skipping a press conference and they're just uploading a video everybody can watch all at once. Do you think there would be some benefit to consumers or to publishers and developers to just bypass the journalists in the middle and say, no, we're just going to upload all our stuff at whatever time to the internet and you can just find out for yourself?
I think it's an interesting point because over the last 5 years, certainly since I've been involved in covering it and watching it, it's become more and more about the consumer. It started out as a press show. It used to be a pain to even watch it. I remember catching streams in 2009, and it was just impossible because there was one crappy camera, and there was a guy who didn't properly know how to use the Zoom, and it was such a nightmare. But now everyone wants to watch it, and it's becoming more and more about the gamers at home than it is about the companies and what they're going to be showing over the next, what they're going to be releasing over the next year. And so it does get to, it has become kind of a middle ground between this is what we're doing over the next year and hey, people at home, get excited about these titles. I think that's why the last couple of E3s have been pretty lame, and there's been segments where Sony showed off the Book of Spells for 40 minutes for no reason, and all the gamers at home are going, come on, show us Uncharted, show us Uncharted. And they're just like, no. This thing for children is what we're focusing on this year.
So do you feel like maybe there would be a benefit in just skipping the press conference and releasing the video like Nintendo did? Because I feel like Nintendo, however many years ago, they had that problem with Skyward Sword where there was interference and Miyamoto was trying to show off how the cool Wii Motion Plus stuff worked so that you'd have one-to-one control and use bowling bombs around. And it was like a lot of people had a fit because it wasn't working and they just assumed it was the game's fault and the game was going to be garbage. In my mind, that was sort of the catalyst. Nintendo was like, we're not leaving anything up to chance anymore. We're just going to make a video. We're going to control the message. We're going to make it a little silly and fun, and we're just going to release it to everybody at once. Forget it.
Yeah, there's definitely a benefit, but it kind of, anyone can release a video any day of the year, but when they do it at E3, everyone's sitting on the edge of their seats waiting to find out what's going to come next. So you've got this kind of balance between, oh, it's going to be really cool because it's E3, we're going to see loads of game stuff, and let's just release a video. You know, Nintendo are getting away with it because A, they're a console manufacturer, and B, everyone else is still doing proper press conferences. I think if everyone went to the way that Nintendo were doing it, there would be no incentive to release it all on the same day because you're already asking people to compare.
Yeah, that's probably true. Maybe E3 needs to turn into more of a thing where on day one they just release a video or whatever. Everybody, here's all our announcements. Everybody, yay, exciting. And then, of course, we at home can't try the games out or whatever unless you get a pass to go. So then what the websites could focus on instead of the boring news like, here's a game, we saw one picture, this is a one-line news article, hooray Star Fox, just tell us about, I played it, here's what to like and not like.
Yeah, but then you've still got the issue of going to E3 is quite expensive. So you'd end up with, I don't know, you'd end up with people who are kind of benefiting from it just by going. E3 is always going to be mad for people that are covering it because everyone is hungry for news. They're hungry for opinions. They're hungry to disagree with people more than anything. They're angry. They're ready to tell people that they're wrong on the simplest of things. And so I think the idea of E3 and the idea of press conferences and that sort of thing is still more important than actually showing the games, which sounds kind of paradoxical, but I don't think it is. I think E3 is a time for fanboys as much as it is anything.
So you think E3 is more of a, it's like the hype train engine. This is where they build the hype. It doesn't matter necessarily that they show the games, so long as they give a hint and they give a good presentation to get you hyped up for the brand.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think back to last year and the crap that Sony were pulling, where they were basically just rubbing it in to Microsoft, and the way people were lapping that up. You know, if someone was doing that on the street, you'd think, what an asshole. But because it was a big company and you support that company, all of a sudden it's fine and it's funny. And, you know, that was all about hype. That was all about convincing the converted, the people that already agree with you.
That's true, yeah. Probably a lot of people were not swayed necessarily by that antics from last year. I guess what I'm kind of wondering now is, do you think a show like PAX is more important? I mean, they let people come. They do some announcements there. It's not as big of an announcement show as E3 is. But do you think PAX at this point is the more important show for the gaming industry?
I don't know about more important, but when you look at, there are gaming shows popping up everywhere. It's happening so much now. There used to be Eurogamer here in the UK, and that was pretty much it. You know, now there's multiplayer here in Telford. That there's like four every year at the International Centre, and that's a huge thing. There's always streams and stuff from it. And then they've got another, I think that it's Eurogamer again, but it's in Birmingham, so it's kind of in the middle of the country rather than at the bottom. And there's more and more shows. I think PAX actually had one in London last year as well. So there's more and more popping up in the UK. And I think it's more about getting people out to play those games and cutting out the kind of previews and the bias. Because someone who goes and stands there in a queue for 40 minutes and then stands next to a PR person and is told, game's fantastic, this game's fantastic, this is what you can do, in a closed environment, is more likely to then go and buy that game than if they just read a preview where the journalist says, well, it was all right, but it could be better.
Yeah, I'm sure that getting it in the hands of people and controlling the message, that's kind of my takeaway, is everything in the future is going to be controlling the message and beaming what you want a consumer to know directly into their brain, rather than putting in a middleman like the old days when you'd wait for a magazine. And then if the one guy from that magazine who played your game didn't happen to like it, everybody who read that magazine went, I don't care about that game anymore.
And I think it's something that we've seen quite a lot in the last few years anyway. The publishers are starting to try and kind of get rid of the less, other than IGN and Eurogamer and that sort of thing, that they'll never be able to do. They are trying to control the message of the smaller blogs and sites by either not giving out review copies. I know through Push Square, who I write for occasionally, that there are times when they really struggle to get mainstream games, or even not that mainstream games, just because the PR person knows that it's going to get a bad review and it's going to end up on Metacritic. So as long as they can delay that, the better.
That does seem strange. There was a little bit of a golden age not that long ago, maybe during the Nonsense Gamer days, 5-6 years ago, where it seemed like you could get review games really easy because they knew, well, you know, you can pretty much look at IGN or any of the big sites and guess what your game is going to get. But then you might have a dark horse and a small blog where the guy who plays it, maybe he's just so excited he was given a game at all, he feels pressured to give it a high score, or maybe he just likes it more than Jaded Reviewer, who has to review every other version of Barbie Horse Adventure. So it seems like times are kind of changing.
As it gets easier and easier to just start a blog or whatever, and anyone can do it, whether you're 15, 16, 17, 18, or older, I think the problem is that, as you say, people are just getting excited that they're even part of the industry, even on the cusp as we are, on the edge of it. I think people are so excited that they get to write about these things and they get to play these things and they get to speak with the developers that they forget that they're supposed to be press. And you see it more and more. You see it with The Last of Us. You saw it with BioShock Infinite, where these people, they were press and they would not hear a bad word against it. You know, you can understand fanboys doing it, but people who are supposed to be the press, who were there arguing in the comments sections over things like, yes, yes, I know that BioShock Infinite is very linear and that the shooting isn't up to much, but I gave it a 10 out of 10 because it's the best game ever, and how dare you come on here and comment anything otherwise. Kind of depressing at the time, but you couldn't say anything about it at the time because so many people were enamored with it. They were so in love with those games that they didn't want to see the negatives. So they were going to the people who agreed with them anyway and not calling and saying, you are the good press. You're the people that are doing your job well.
Yeah, that's sort of a problem with journalism of any kind, is people just find the one or two people that they agree with, and then that's the only ones they're ever going to follow. Hopefully everyone agrees with me. I can have whatever opinion you want. If you want to listen to this podcast and read everything I write, I'm actually glad that we have a record. I just re-listened to an old show where I kind of took a shit on The Last of Us at first. I was not in love with that game for about the first 3 or 4 hours, and it won me over. I mean, it did end up being, I think, probably it's aged like a fine wine in my mind. I think it's one of the better games I've played. But I have audio evidence of me going, this game is not that good. I don't understand all the tens. I don't know why people like it so much. So, hey, nobody can accuse me of some sort of crazy bias who just loves that game for no reason.
I'm still there. I still don't think it deserved the tens. Honestly, it was a great game, and the story was fantastic. But people mistook loving the characters for it being a fantastic game, and in so many ways it wasn't.
Yeah, I think that's something we're going to have to do an episode about when the new one comes out. We can get into the story stuff and have some fun breaking it down in depth.
I'm looking forward to the death threat.
Well, I think we've pretty much said all we needed to say about E3 for this year. It was a fine show. Do you think in the future E3 is going to evolve into something that would be unrecognizable to us at this point?
No, I don't think it will. I think it'll end up becoming more and more of a joke as people start getting more frequent gaming news from other sources, and they start... I mean, already, they were releasing E3 trailers the week before, and the amount of people that were kicking off just because they were releasing E3 trailers the week before was phenomenal. It absolutely amazed me that people were getting so wound up over a couple of days. And if they're getting wound up about that, any change to E3 is going to just, you know, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse over the years. And eventually it'll die out, but it'll be replaced by other smaller shows, just like the bigger sites are becoming more and more, the bigger gaming sites are becoming more and more kind of less impact as opposed to the very many smaller gaming sites. So there you go. I mean, that's it, isn't it? At the end of the day, people want regular updates, and they want them from people they agree with. And so E3 will eventually just kind of disappear, I think, and be replaced by smaller shows.
Last question for you to close it out. I'm kind of wondering, with as connected as the consoles are, do you think that we will see some kind of E3 demos in the future? Like, not only do the journalists get to play this game, a week later, here's the very E3 demo they played. Download it this weekend and play it on PlayStation or Xbox One. Or do you think that's something they'll always sort of keep away from the regular person because a journalist supposedly knows that any flaws in it will get worked out, whereas a regular person might go, nope, it sucks, I don't care anymore?
It'd be nice to think that could happen, but I don't think any of the digital stores are that the people behind them are capable enough at the minute to get that done. There's too much red tape, and I don't think it'll ever happen. But you have just reminded me of my favorite thing about E3 this year that completely slipped my mind. The Ground Zeroes came out a few months ago, and in February, and everyone said, oh my god, this is so short. They said it wasn't a demo, but it's a demo. And E3 this year, they had a demo of Phantom Pain, and it was an hour long. It was longer than Ground Zeroes, which wasn't a demo, apparently. Isn't that fantastic?
That is awesome, because that game was a demo, and barely one.
It was so good, but at the same time, so short. And to find out that Hideo Kojima was like, no, it's not a demo, it's fantastic, shut up everyone that disagrees with me. And then for them to release an hour-long demo at E3, and they didn't even kind of, it was without an ounce of hypocrisy that they did it. They didn't think there was anything wrong with it. It's fantastic.
Well, everybody, you'll know next time when we're looking down the barrel of the next Metal Gear game and they release a game that is only $30 or whatever, everybody will go, nope, I don't think I'm going to fall for that one again.
Except I probably will, and I know a bunch of people that probably will as well. It's terrible.
Yeah, sadly, I probably will too. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Anyway, thanks for joining me to talk about E3, man.
Always good.
All right, and next time, I don't 100% know what we'll be talking about yet, but we will have some structure, maybe a little more than we had this time. This time was a little off the cuff. But next time, Season 2 continues rolling next week. Until then, we are out.